Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am your host for this show, Craig Fowler. And to help me talk through two managerial changes in the Scottish lower leagues, as well as the last game he saw involving his beloved side, is the one, it's the only, it's Craig Telfer.
Hi Craig, how you doing, mate?
I'm good. Still trying to shake off those post-year cobwebs, but I'm getting there. How about you?
Yes, that was good because, of course, full discretion, you and I spent time in each other's company at New Year. And when I woke up the next day, to put it mildly, I wasn't firing on all cylinders. So I imagine you must have been in the same sort of boat.
Yeah, and I got up and done it again on the second. So.
Oh, you must have been absolutely. I suppose when I text you actually to check about what time we're doing this, it took you to about like 1 o'clock in the afternoon to get back to me. You're saying, sorry, I'm still getting over the Hibs Hearts game. I thought, wow, that's 48 hours. That's fair play to you.
Well, that's my only New Year's resolution for this year was to work out on more days, to exercise on more days than I didn't. And that could either be a workout, a 5K run, or like walking like 12,000 steps or something. So I'm 0 for 4 actually, because I'm probably not going to do it today either.
Listen,
and I've had two horrendous hangovers. So.
Listen, man, New Year's resolutions don't kick in on the 1st or the 2nd or the 3rd or even the 4th. So I think what you do, Fowler, is just write this week off. Don't write it off, but just like sort of get your lands in order, and then Monday the 9th, that's when it starts.
I'm hoping to be to the gym tomorrow. That's especially since the podcast that I did have planned tomorrow has been cancelled because Tony Anderson's not well. So,
oh, of course,
that's meant a wee bit of rejigging that we've done this week. So, I haven't actually decided fully yet while we're recording this if this is going to be the Patreon or a main show. It depends if Andy and Duncan have any problems with what I've asked them to do. I'll probably release this as just a shorter main show, but we'll see how it goes.
I don't think, Fowler, you can't put two people who present a show on regional BBC television, you can't make us the Patreon. Come on. Don't be silly.
Right, well, we've got three things to mainly talk about. We'll talk about Stirling against Stenhousemuir, which you were at the weekend. We'll talk about the fact that Stenhousemuir have a new manager in Gary Naismith. Mm-hmm. And we'll also talk about Jim McIntyre being given the boot by Cove Rangers. Is there any of them you particularly like to begin with?
I suppose we can. The Stenhousemuir ones are effectively two sides of the same coin, so I think we might as well just start by doing it in the order you presented it. We might as well start with Stirling Albion 3, Stenhousemuir 1 from 31st of December.
Yes. So we both, you were at the game.
Mm-hmm.
One of 952 people in attendance. That's a great crowd.
The attendance was excellent, and I've got to say, it was fair play to Stirling Albion on the. Have you been to Forth Bank before?
Yes, but only for covering reserve games.
Right, okay. So, I'd say it's a local derby, but there's no real like ill feeling between the teams. It's just the fact that they're geographically close to one another. And the Stirling Albion fans were in one stand on one side of the pitch, and the Stenhousemuir fans were on the other side of the pitch. So the Stirling Albion fans, who more or less packed out their stand, there's a group of young supporters that sit on one corner of the stands. They had a tifo, And it's very, very rare that you actually see a TIFO in lower league Scottish football. And it must have been a row about four of them with a sort of like red and silver like flags waving them away. And I thought it was very sweet. It was very cute. It's the sort of thing you can imagine Sam North covering on his YouTube channel. That's the sort of thing it was. So yeah, it was a really good crowd there. And certainly the home supporters would have been absolutely delighted with what they saw from the match.
Yes, which was a 3-1 victory with a popular problem that you had with this Stenhouse Muir side and all the way through Stephen Swift's tenure, really, especially when it came to signing permanent players for this position, and that is the position of goalkeeper, because you didn't have Gift Stirling a couple of goals.
Aye, the first and second goals are shambles. It's Jay Cantley that's playing in goals for Stenhouse Muir at the moment. Not the guy who was brought in as number one, Conor Brennan. He's been dropped. He lost his place after a really, really poor showing against Stranraer. Go and watch the goals on YouTube to see how bad they were. But for Sean Crichton's first game, so Stephen Swift dropped Conor Brennan for his final match. But then when Sean Crichton came in, when Stephen Swift left the club and Sean Crichton came in to manage the team on an interim basis, Conor Brennan came back in for the defeat against Forfar Athletic, but then was left out, replaced by Jay Cantley. So strange setup there. You kind of go with one or the other. And the funny thing was, I was speaking to my friend Mark, the guy I sat next to the games, we were talking about the goalkeeper situation, and I said, referring back to the Forfar match, I actually think Jay Cantley can maybe count himself a bit unlucky that he was dropped for those matches. Seconds later, I mean literally seconds later, Stirling Albion were a goal ahead. It's a shot from Ross Davidson. He hits, I think, about 20 yards, and it's reasonably well struck. There's a fair degree of pace behind it. It's placed to low to the goalkeeper's left, but he should save it. I don't think there's any other way you can save it. It goes right through his hands, and you can tell that by his reaction, the fact that he sinks to the turf, face buried into the grass, and that you can tell by some of the way the players sort of react to it. They're really angry about it, but they're not going to bollock a 20-year-old goalkeeper. And the second goal, I mean, that was a feature of the match, is that Cantley didn't come off his line. And with Sean Crichton not being in the team, there's no, other than Nicky Jameson and perhaps Nat Wedderburn, there's nobody with a real aerial threat there, like both attacking and defending set pieces. So you really need your goalkeeper to come off your line, especially against a team like Stirling Albion, who have got big guys. Like, there's probably about four guys in that team that are a threat from set pieces, the back three, plus Robert Thompson, maybe even Dale Carrick as well, because he's quite spry when he's got a decent leap in him. And you can see that by the goal. It's because Jay Cantley wasn't coming off his line, Danny Denham was putting balls in. Like, I actually said to my friend as well, I can't tell if Danny Denham's deliveries are good or if Stenhouse Muir just can't deal with him. But Danny Denham was made to look like prime David Beckham with some of the balls that he was putting in. And you can see that with the second goal. It's a ball that comes in a deep in. I mean, I think, like, no full disclosure, I text Danny after the game, and he was saying that he knew the goalkeeper was bad, so he just dumped balls right on top of him. And just let the big boys in the Stirling team deal with it. And you can see that there. Ross McGeachie jumps into it, the ball hits off his back and very kindly breaks to Robert Thompson to hit from close range. And Cantley's down on the ground again, looking for some sort of fill that was never going to be given in a million years. And it is it's been a perpetual problem all throughout Stephen Swift's time. He signed four permanent goalkeepers and all four of them are absolutely useless. And that's something that Gary Naismith, we'll talk about this later, but that is a prime position that needs to be addressed this month.
The second goal with Cantley, he does, like, he barely, like you say, he barely comes off his line and yet somehow doesn't get, somehow the ball kind of goes over him, and he just seems to, once he realises that this situation has got away from him, he pretends that he's been the victim of a sniper attack.
Yes, aye. It was like a sort of poor man Stephen Taylor against Aston Villa, you know, when the ball hit him in the arm and he goes down. it was like that. And just in the hope that the goalkeeper, the referee might blow up and spare your blushes. But no, there was absolutely nothing wrong with it. Stirling Albion knew exactly what they were doing, dumping balls on top of him and seeing how he dealt with them. And he didn't deal with them. It was actually an incident, in fact. I'm sure it was actually between Stirling's, I actually think it was just after, not long after Stirling Albion's first goal. They had the same thing happened. It was a Danny Denham corner in from the right. And the ball, it looked as though it hit Will Sewell, who was in the line. I think there was decent shouts for a penalty. I wouldn't have been 100% surprised if it had been given. I think Stenhouse Muir got away with one. But that was just symptomatic of how poor Stenis Muir were at defending set pieces. But you've also got to credit simultaneously, you've got to credit Stirling Albion for that, knowing what the opposition's weakness are and then playing to it, and it worked perfectly. That's how they got their second goal.
Yeah, reading a bit more into the game, it was just kind of familiar about what you've kind of complained about Steny this season, and that you could see the Stirling fans on the thread saying that Steny knocked the ball out well at times, but at the end of the day, they just couldn't defend.
No, you're absolutely correct there. I thought in terms of a match, I thought it was pretty well balanced, certainly up until about the Stirling Albion third goal went in, because by that point, there's about 20, 25 minutes of the game left to go, and it's very easy for a team who are down on their luck just to think, well, we're not going to come back into this. And you could see that their play suffered for it and they became pretty disjointed after that. But certainly up until that point, it was a fairly even contest. The game sort of ebbed and flowed well. Stenis Muir are a team that are capable of passing the ball around well. They've got guys in the team who like to get on the ball. There was just a lack of ruthlessness inside the box. Will Sewell, signed from Largs Thistle, he's a guy that scored 42 goals last season. He has sort of been recast as a sort of like a right-sided attacker of the front three. And a lot of Stenis Muir's best play came from balls that he was putting in from the right-hand side. You could see that actually just prior to him scoring, he put in a really good goal, a really good ball that Tam Orr failed to make contact with. It subsequently gets recycled out to Ewan O'Reilly, who puts the ball in that saved that Sewell hits it from. And at the start of the second half, Sewell put a really good ball in from the right that Orr, as perhaps if he'd be a bit on his toes, he might have been able to slide in, get a touch to put that away. But it was an even contest. And it's something that Stephen Swift said in his fight in the final game up at Elgin City. It's instances where Stenis Muir are losing games. And he's probably right. He's probably right, because we're seeing it time and time again that Stenis Muir certainly have been competitive. They're just being undone by mistakes all the time. It's like every game's a mistake. You know, coming into this match, that Stenis Muir are probably going to concede at least two goals a game. So there's a massive onus on the strikers to find it into the net. And largely, when Stenis Muir are scoring goals, they're scoring goals every game. But the problem is they're just conceding goals. I use the term before, on an industrial scale. And you can't do that against a team like Stirling Albion. You just know you're going to get punished. And I mean, we certainly didn't help ourselves, but that was the case.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And before we move on to discussing the man who's going to be tasked with trying to solve those problems for Steny, nearly a goal of the season contender from Nia Joseph, outside of the foot, from outside the area, curled it just off the post. That would have been quite something.
Absolutely astonishing, because Nia Joseph's been rubbish. I've got to say, put my hand up and say, like, I'd left by this point at the game. So after like the third goal went in, like I knew it was coming out to you on the evening. So I was like, well, I want to get through to Edinburgh for that. So I left the game early, so I didn't see it happening. Oh, it was only when I watched the highlights that I saw what had happened. And yeah, he's a player. I think Sean and I spoke about this. He wears like short sleeve shirts with gloves. He's got lilac hair, and I think, I don't know, I'm 36 now, Fowler. I worry that I'm encroaching into your da sort of area, but that's the sort of stuff that really fucks me off. It's like, it would be fine if it would become one of those things that you would not pay a single shred of attention to if you were doing it on the pitch, but he hasn't done it on the pitch. And but he did well there. He did well. I think that in the second half, he gave the team a little bit of impetus to take them forward there.
And is there anything to be said for Stirling before we move on?
I'm glad you actually touched on Stirling, because it'd been an absolute travesty not to mention them. Stirling are a good side. Stirling are a good side. Stirling are a massive game next week against Dumbarton. I think that's perhaps one of the biggest games in the SPFL that's taking place next weekend. So that's a top of the table clash. And I think a real 7-pointer, there's 4 points a real six pointer, because there's only 4 points that separate the two sides. So Stirling can really like bring themselves like neck and neck with Dumbarton, or Dumbarton can stretch their lead to 7 points at the top. But I think what's massively impressed about Stirling, that they're impressive all across the pitch. I think Blair Curry, decent goalkeeper. You know, there's nothing, if you were to, he's just like a good all-rounder, you know, good shot stopper, good distribution, solid handler of the ball, good at coming for crosses and so on. Everything that Stensmuir don't have in a goalkeeper. I think in guys like Ross McGeachy, Jordan McGregor, they're big boys. You know, big boys that can put themselves around a bit. You've got to do something a wee bit clever to try and get the better of them, since we weren't able to do that. In the middle of the park, Ross Davidson, I think we've not really seen the best of him at Stirling just quite yet because he's had problems with injury. But when he gets on the ball, I mean, he doesn't necessarily do anything fancy, but he's just really good at screening the back, a real good number six. And, of course, he chipped in with the goal of the game. Danny Denham, somebody who we've spoken about there, like, he was playing on the, I was surprised to see him actually playing on the right-hand side of the attacking four. Very, very one-footed. You know exactly what he's going to want to do. He's going to want to come on onto his left foot. I think actually his right foot is just exclusive for standing on. But he had a good game. And what he, I don't think he's quite as exciting a player as he once was when, say, he was like at Forfar Athletic earlier in his career when he first broke into the SPFL. But what he lacks in pizzazz, he makes up for in work effort. And work effort, work rate and effort, and he's a really hard-working player. However, the jewel in Stirling Albion's crown is definitely that front three of Kai Fotheringham, Robert Thompson and Dale Carrick. I think that's the best in the division between the three of them. I think that Fotheringham is playing at a level way, way, way beneath what he should be, like, to be honest. I'm surprised he's at Stirling. He should be at a team, probably a team like Falkirk, Airdrie, someone like that, at least one level above. And you could tell he gave Adam Corbett a hard time on the right. Just like, he's quite tricky. He's fast with the ball as well. You think you've got him sussed out, and then he can just do something just to create that space and take it away from you. And between the two of them up front, Thompson and Carrick, have got a real nice partnership between them. A real sort of like little and large. And that for Carrick, for all his injuries, is very, very quick off the mark. Very quick off the mark, a good finisher, and you can tell that's someone that's played at a higher level. And I think you'll know better than me, Phil. I think it's fair to say if it wasn't for his injury problems, he would still be playing probably at least in the championship. You know, and there's just a real good balance with that forward line there, and I think that's going to really hold them in good stead. I still think Dumbarton are the team to beat. They're the team that I fancy to win the division, but I do like the look of Stirling Albion. I mean, they've played Stensmuir 3 times this season, and they've scored 3-0, 3-1, 3-1, and that just goes to show you the prowess that they've got up front. Last time they played Dumbarton as well, they beat them 6-0. So they're not a team to be trifled with. I like what I've seen. I think that Darren Young's doing a good job there. Good luck to them.
Yeah, he had a few more injury problems, but even back when he was at Hearts, when Hearts first went down to the Championship, so Dale Carrick had finished the previous campaign as Hearts like top striker, and I mean, there wasn't much to beat. It was, for most of the campaign, it was Callum Patterson and Ryan Stevenson playing up front, neither of whom were forwards. Or at least Patterson wasn't at that stage of his career and certainly didn't fit into that team. And Carrick was an upgrade because he could actually play with his back to goal as well as being a bit of a goal threat. You kind of thought once Hart dropped down that he'd be a kind of regular fixer, but that season he missed pretty much all of it due to injury. And that just kind of derailed things. And then it was kind of similar problem, I think, when he went to Raith Rovers, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And
Airdrie as well.
Yeah, he just seems to have kind of, he's been a bit snake bitten, but it was somebody that always certainly rated at Tynecastle. Somebody I certainly rated at Tynecastle as well was Gary Naismith, and he's now your new manager.
That's a good link, Fowler. That's a good link.
You happy enough with that?
I think so. I think in the circumstances, that was perhaps the best we were going to get. I think that when we did the post-mortem of Stephen Swiss Rain, the two managers that I'd spoken about were Danny Lennon and Paul Hartley. Paul Hartley was perhaps, we can talk about him later on in this podcast, but I think they were perhaps a bit ambitious. I think that Danny Lennon didn't apply for the job. My understanding is Danny Lennon didn't apply for the job, and I don't think he would have been fancied for it even if he had. So I think with Naismith, you've got a manager who has coached at this level in the past with East Fife and with Edinburgh City, and he's had a decent, I'd say a qualified success at both. First broke into, he's a player manager at East Fife and managed them when they got relegated. I think it was 2015 they went down. Subsequently though, and surprisingly, stayed on the following campaign and won the division with them. And did pretty well for them. And I think that he got his move to Queen of the South on the back of that. Just checking in the Stenhouse Muir thread on Pine Bovril, the poster on Skyline Drifter, who might be familiar to posters at that level, Queen of the South fan, has just written a big treatise about his time at Queen of the South. I haven't had the chance to read it yet. I'll do that in my own time. So I'm not 100% sure how it went from at Palmerston. But he went to Edinburgh City, and I think that his time there was mixed. He was let go. The team were in fourth place and he was let go towards the final third of the season. They got, sorry, last season, the fact the final third of last season.
Yeah, it was.
And I think that was a bit of the time people were sort of like, that's an interesting appointment. But I think that Alan Mabry has gone on, is doing a superlative job there and is probably doing better than Naismith has done there. So, I'm wait and see. I'm excited. I think it's what we needed at the time, like a safe pair of hands. I think it'd be nice to go for something a wee bit, if you want to try a bit of experimental, like someone like Stephen Swift, but that just hasn't worked out. And I think that Sean Crichton, after the match, who's taking the team on an interim basis, he said that Stenhouse Muir are now, it's about survival. The guy, Cammy McIntyre, who was interviewing him, said, oh, we're just like a handful of points of fourth place. And Sean Crichton's like, well, no, it's now you're taking it one game at a time. You can't even begin to think about that. Stenhouse Muir have picked up 4 points from the last 9 games. That's relegation form. I think that's the, as far as I've been supporting them off the top of my head, this is the worst run of form we've ever been on. So it's just making sure that we stop conceding shite goals, that we can take the chances up the further forward. And so I just think that there's a good group of players here. There are good players in this team. They're players that I really like. Just they're not performing. I just think that they just need someone to galvanise them. And I hope that Naismith is the man that can do that.
Yeah, there could maybe be some sort of concern about just kind of a career trajectory, because sometimes the managers just tend to lose it a bit. They seem to lose it forever. But doesn't necessarily always happen. And it has to be said as well that I don't think, from what I really recall about his time at Queen of South, I don't think Naismith was necessarily well-liked, and I don't think he necessarily looked upon as having done that great a job. But he also, from what I remember, wasn't an unmitigated disaster either. And he certainly wasn't a disaster last season at Edinburgh. And it's key that not only does he have experience of winning in this division, and even last year, they were in fourth, or at least a point off it when he
was. They were in fourth when he got sacked.
So even had like a degree of success last year as well, and that's having a degree of success in the same division within the last year. So that means he knows the division. Mm-hmm. And when you're just looking for somebody to help win your points to keep you in it, then that's pretty much all you could really... It certainly makes a lot more sense than hiring Christoph Berra, who was somebody that was also linked with a job.
Aye, some of the names that were linked with the job, Gary Jardin at Civil Service Strollers, James Fowler was one that was mooted. I wouldn't fancy Christoph Berra. I think that's a nice idea, is giving someone who has just finished up playing, someone who had a decent career, giving them the first gig, but you're at the stage where you don't want to do that. It's just that the season has been an unmitigated disaster. There are so many like fault lines within the team, and those need to be rectified immediately. So like the idea, like fantasy booking, I'd love to give it to Mick Dunlop. I've said that last time, who's at Gartcairn. That's the sort of, I would love to see Mick Dunlop managing Stenhouse Muir at some point. Now's not the time though. Now's not the time for that. It's just to go with tried and tested, and Gary Naismith is tried and he's tested. I think what else I'd like to say about that though, Fowler, as well, Brown Ferguson is returning to the club as assistant manager. I see you're nodding, you're about to ask about him.
Yes.
Aye, I'll let you can ask the question and it's just me talking all the time. Just to break it up a wee bit.
I was first going to make a joke about Christoph Berra wasting his first couple of training sessions by just moaning about Daniel Stendel and Robbie Nielsen. But yeah, then I was going to say that it is, there's a, fans seem to be particularly, fairly pleased with Naismith, but the real kind of the kicker that really kind of makes a lot of people happy is the fact that Brian Ferguson is returning to the club.
I love Brian Ferguson. Absolutely love Brian Ferguson. He had a 7-year association with the club. He joined under Davy Irons from Alloa in 2011. This is the Alloa team that were relegated. Remember that the team that were, they'd finished in second place the previous year under Alan Maitland, and the following season ended up getting relegated. So
and that was Bomber, after bottling the title as well.
That's right. So Bomber came in from then, and he was a very, very popular player and managed the club after Scott Booth left. And he was the right man at the right time, I think it was. Someone who the fans all really liked. He'd been a player for, I think it was like 3 years he'd been playing at the club for before he was asked to come on to Scott Booth's coaching team as his assistant. And I think that injuries had taken their toll, so it was an easier move for him to make in terms of that. And when it didn't work out with Booth, everyone like unanimously wanted to Bomber to do well for it. And I think that he'd had a bit of a mixed time at Stenhousemuir. Kept the team up, then got the team relegated, then won the league won promotion with the team, and then got sacked like in 2018, quite early into the season. I think he might have felt a bit harsh done by. So I was a wee bit surprised to see him come back, like if he'd any beef with the director or something over the way he was treated. But he's been back at Oakleview a number of times. Bomber, he was previously Naismith's assistant at Edinburgh. He had gone to Arbroath, that's where we signed him from, actually. Gone to Arbroath as part of a new scouting team that Barry Sellers had put together with Craig Ireland and the Bomber. So I think just coaching is perhaps something that he prefers doing. So it's great for us, it's great for the supporters, and it's just having had a manager previously who you had zero connection with, someone who I was told wouldn't come into the wee bar before or after games because, I quote, he didn't want pissed up supporters slagging him off, to have someone come in there like Bomber, who is frequently seen around the club, who'll stop and have a chat to you. Brilliant. And I really, really hope it does well for Naismith, but especially for Bomber. I really like the guy, and it's just a real galvanising presence, and I'm really looking forward to the weekend's game against Stranraer. I think we'll lose it. We'll lose it 3-1. That's okay. But just to see what the new manager's like, and just to, you know, just get behind the team. You'll know that yourself, Fowler, just like when you're just fed up with one manager and something new comes in, and it just gives you, as a fan, you just get a wee bit of a buzz back. That's how I feel at the moment.
Right, let's move on to another team that's going to hope for a good buzz of a new manager coming in, but it's a bit of a different kind of situation, this one. Cove Rangers, they've departed ways with Jim McIntyre. There's big rumours that Paul Hartley's about to walk back in the door, and that would certainly explain why McIntyre is leaving, because on the face of it, it looks a bit of a harsh decision, doesn't it?
You would say, yeah, I try to justify it, and from the outside looking in, it does seem like a pretty strange decision from Cove Rangers, because I mean, since October they've gone on in the last 8 games, for instance, they've only lost 2 of the last 8. 1-2, drew 4, lost 2. Excuse me. And I think the last one was a bit embarrassing, losing 6-1 to Cali Thistle at the weekend, despite having taken the lead.
And quite an undermanned Cali Thistle team.
Yeah, Cali Thistle, who have got more injuries than, just trying to think of some of the Napoleonic Wars, somebody who had loads of injuries. I can't think of any examples for the Napoleonic Wars off the top of my
head. More injuries than the Black Knight from Monty Python.
Oh, there you go. That's a reference. I've never seen it, but I imagine there'll be people at home going, yeah.
That's a lot of injuries.
That is a lot of injuries. So yeah, from the outside looking in, it does seem a little bit harsh. This is the first time since Cove have joined the SPFL that there has been, where they've not been winning games regularly, I think it's fair to say. You know, I mean, they absolutely cruised through League 2. They finished in third place, I think, in League 1, and that's that weird curtailed pandemic season. Lost out in the semi-finals to Airdrieonians, I think it was. And then the following season, they go on and win the division. So everything, is just three years of winning. And this is the first time where they're not doing it on a regular basis. And I think outsiders could be like, well, that seems a bit harsh, but there must be a pretty decent reason behind McIntyre going.
I think the reason that mainly makes sense is that Hartley will be coming back because, I mean, it's a bit, the kind of sentiment is that McIntyre would frustrate the fans with some of his decisions and stuff and was not as seen as good a manager as Paul Hartley. But I think it kind of goes back to what you were saying. Sometimes the context doesn't apply or gets lost with, and if you're losing games. Yeah, I know the fans could say, well, we're losing more games because the manager's not as good, but you are moving up a level. You're moving up a level. I don't know if they were necessarily cutting their cloth, but they would certainly had receded a little bit in terms of the kind of lavish spending that we've maybe seen off them in previous campaigns.
And yeah, it seemed to be the case. Yeah.
It really did look to be a season of consolidation, and so far that's pretty much what they've done. I mean, just the game before, they defeated Hamilton, one of the kind of contenders for relegation. And yeah, it's embarrassing to lose this game, and some of the goals they lost were very poor. I managed to see the highlights of this off of Wisecrack. Didn't see the highlights of the fourth goal because Pixelot just didn't follow the play on that one, just stuck at the halfway line.
Here we are, 3 years since Pixelot has been brought in. It's still terrible.
But there was another few of the goals are a bit farcical. They survived a couple of big chances even before they opened the scoring. Cali actually hit the post with a long-range effort about 45 seconds in. Then there was a couple of big chances that they missed. Cove score, the equaliser is so easy. It's just a simple free kick into the penalty box. Billy Mackay, like, noted lower league Scottish football goal scorer. Not goal scorer as well. I mean, he's had a couple of decent seasons in the top flight. Nobody marks him. He just runs in completely free. 6 yards out. Can't be any easier for him. Then they concede another one for a set piece. The fifth goal is a good laugh. It's an off free kick flight into the penalty area. Stuart McKenzie comes for it. He gets there, but at the last second, I think he's worried about getting clattered by the Inverness striker. Takes his eye off the ball. The ball hits him, hits McClelland, and then goes into the back of the net. And when the sixth goal as well. McKenzie wasn't great for the sixth goal either because it's a header across the face of goal. And I don't know whether he thinks it's going in or he thinks it's going wide. It does neither. It hits the post and comes back. Had he been moving across his goal, he could have probably gathered it. Instead, he doesn't. He's very late to move. Billy Mackay reacts much quicker, and it's an easy goal for his hat-trick. So there was a lot of concerning aspects about it, but at the same time, and this is what McIntyre talked about after the game, they had Max Johnson's going back to Motherwell, so they needed to play Scott Ross at right-back, and Conor Scully was playing left-back because Shane Logan's out injured. Mm-hmm. And Mark Reynolds went off at half-time as well, although I'm not sure if that was just because of how crap the defence was in the first half, with McClellan coming on in place of him. Although I did also see they're about to lose Jack Sanders, who's going to get recalled by Kelly.
They lost him earlier today.
Right, so they've lost him as well. So there is a lot of concerns about the defence. McIntyre was talking after the game, like, we're going to need to bring all these, bring in recruitments in January. So he certainly was talking like a man that expected himself to still be there. Guess Paul Hartley's been on the blower then.
Well, I think... I was trying to think about it. Maybe I was looking at Cove now. Now, I'll be honest and say that Cove aren't a team I've seen much of this season, just because they're playing against sides who don't necessarily film their highlights. Cove's own highlights are a wee bit sporadic, so you don't really get a chance to check them out as much. But just having looked at some of the results, like, for instance, Cove have got into a bad habit of conceding late goals recently. Like, for instance, they drew 4-4 with Hamilton at the end of October. Andy Ryan scored the equaliser in the 89th minute. They played Greenock Morton in the 19th of November. Robbie Crawford scored the winner in the 87th minute. And then they played Partick Thistle the next week. I mean, this is a sort of like once-in-a-lifetime sort of stuff, like the frogs falling from the sky in Magnolia. But Jamie Sneddon, the goalkeeper, scores a 95th-minute equaliser. You know, you never see these sort of things. So, to me, if they're conceding, like, that's three games that in quite a short space of time when they are conceding late goals, and maybe there's a concern that the players, they're not as fit under McIntyre, they're not as focused, they're not as well drilled, they don't concentrate as much. There may be something to do with that. Maybe the people have already spoken to him about that and said there's a concern, this is an area that needs to be addressed, that after the back of that Cali Thistle game, it might not have been addressed. So there's all this sort of stuff. But to me, and something you've mentioned, I think that Paul Hartley, after leaving Hartlepool in September, has indicated that he is looking for a return to management. This is all pure conjecture, but there's perhaps been, I mean, his, I think his father-in-law is John Sheeran, who is the certainly a fairly senior figure at Cove Rangers, maybe the chairman, maybe the, like, a sporting director, director of football type there, and just said, well, that's position, we'll meet, we'll see how we get on Jim McIntyre. They lose 6-1. It's a lever for them to pull to get rid of him to bring in Hartley. And McIntyre can probably feel a wee bit hard done by, but like Hartley's just really popular at Cove. You know, he's had all that, he had 3 years of a really good success there. He's a good manager at part-time level. McIntyre, when he was announced, it was kind of like feeling like you just had a brilliant three-course meal and you're washing it down with 10p lemonade. You know, that's the sort of feeling I had from Jim McIntyre. So it's a funny one. I think that he, again, you will know that yourself from having been a football supporter. If a manager comes into your club and you don't really fancy him, there's always that feeling like he has to do a hell of a lot of work to try and prove himself. And I think that was the case with McIntyre. I think that the feeling was broadly underwhelming with McIntyre coming in at Cove Rangers. And it's just been, it's not been terrible, but it's not been brilliant either. So why not get in the, when he's available, getting the guy there who has brought like incredible levels of success to the club.
And if Hartley is going to come back and lead up a recruitment drive, he could maybe actually just sign all the players that he signed for Hartlepool in the summer, because for the fourth tier of English football, I'm not sure how many of these guys you'd want in your team. But for the Scottish Championship, Kyle Leather and Regan Tumulty, Senan Yang, Ewan Murray, Jake Hasty, Mikkel and Jolie. I actually looked, Hartlepool signed Theo Robinson this season. I don't know if you remember him, but he was absolutely garbage.
I don't remember the name of Jolly. I remember, like, I was actually on their Wikipedia page earlier looking at the guy and I was like, that guy sounds pretty suppose when he was in loan at Kilmarnock previously. Yeah. But it's when he was doing that recruitment drive and when he signed Mohamed Niang from Partick Thistle. I mean, he had been at Alloa the previous season and had done okay at Scottish League One level. I just thought that was what are you doing? It's like, I mean, I don't watch a lot of like English lower league football, but the impression I get is that you need to be really, really fit and strong to do it. And I think Senna can put himself around the pitch. He's not great though. You know, he's probably a good League One player. To me, it just seemed like it kind of had the same feeling that when he was the Falkirk manager. And him and Richard Mitchell, that scout, brought in all these players to the club. And I reckon Hartlepool supporters will hate Scotland, will just hate Scottish people because of the back of that terrible recruitment drive. Like, next time, any time Hartlepool sign a player who's Scottish or has played in Scotland, immediately they'll be like, this guy's shite. Or just purely off the back of all the rest of them being as poor as they were.
He didn't actually sign Theo Robinson. That was after Hartley had already been binned. He'd been binned on September 18th. That is not lasting very long in a job, especially in that time. So he was hired, well, I don't know when he was hired, as they say here on this Wikipedia page, but he would have been hired early in the summer, like May or June. In that time, he managed to sign 16 players, and they were rock bottom of the table when he left.
9% win percentage. 11 games, I saw that. Somebody put on Pine Ball for 11 games that he was in charge before he was emptied. I saw people as well talking about, just going back to Cove generally, thinking that Cove are perhaps too big for their boots and perhaps have got ideas above their station, and that being, I think it was when, was it me, you and Sean, or just myself and Sean were talking about the Championship, how there is, I mean, there's two teams that are really cut adrift in that, and then there's this big blob of teams. And that Cove are probably going to be the worst of that blob of teams, which, given where they've come from and they've just been stepping up, and there's a lot of players in that team that are still playing for them from their Highland League days, like there is a big step up, and there is, like, you've got to adapt to the levels, but maybe it's like the amount of money that's been spent at Cove, the chairman didn't really want to turn the other cheek and so on, and Hartley's available, McIntyre seems to be a bit of an abrasive character, all these sort of factors that have just gone against them. So I think it's probably, what's the expression, death by a thousand cuts?
Yeah.
For Jim McIntyre, aye.
Right, Craig, thank you very much for joining me.
No, thank you. That's a fairly breezy podcast. See if this is me and Sean, we'd still be talking about New Year. That's what we're doing, still be talking about New Year. So it's actually good. We need you there, Fowler, as just sort of like a good moderating presence here, just to keep everyone on the straight and narrow.
For the sake of brevity.
And for the sake of brevity, yes. Well, that's good for 40 minutes.
Yeah, that is certainly good. Like I said earlier, don't know if this is going to be a Patreon or a main show, but if it is a main show, please check out the Patreon, where I will be talking to Gary Cocker about Dundee's great run coming to an end with a shocking 4-2 home defeat to Arbroath.
What are you talking to him for? He wasn't even there. He was in the queue when the first two Arbroath goals went in. In fact, I think he was still queuing when Williamson was sent off. You're talking to the wrong person.
If you'd like to pay money to hear that kind of insight.
What was it like? You know, I'm getting the Chris Kamara, I don't know Jeff. That's the sort of thing I'm getting in my mind when you're asking, so what was the first goal like? Gary won't have a clue.
I've at least looked at them, so I know what the goals were like.
Were they bad goals?
Yeah, the first three goals are all set pieces.
Oh, that's bad. I'm not going to spoil that podcast, but I thought this was Dundee really beginning to get their act together, but doesn't appear to be the case.
And I'll also be talking to Craig Cairns about a game that didn't take place. But we'll just kind of look at Dunfermline's recent form in general and their lead at the top of League One.
So if somebody's tuned into this podcast as part of the free show and you're saying, listen, pay us money to hear some piping hot football insight, you're talking about a cunt that wasn't even it, a cunt that didn't get into one of the games, and about a game that didn't even take place at all because the pitch was frozen.
So if you would like to listen to all that, it's patreon.com/tennispodcast. I've not decided which tier I'll put that up on yet, but we'll see how it goes. We'll see how the podcast goes, first of all. The two of them go, I don't know. I was there, the game didn't take place. And yeah, might just bet it, but we'll see.
At least I was at Stirling Albion. I was there. I was there. So at least you've got eyewitness testimony.
Right, and thank you to everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon. Goodbye.
Podcast Network.